This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Monday means the great EJ Raddick from NHL Now, and he's joining us from Toronto for the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies tonight. How are you, buddy?
I am good. It's good to be with the great Don LaGreca. So happy to be here with you. And Toronto got flew up this morning and here for the for the afternoon. We'll do some taping for our show from here, and then I'll do a bunch of interviews and then zip right out back to New Jersey.
So yeah, this is always a fun kind of weekend and day for sure. Yeah. With all the games we saw on Saturday and the induction stuff is always a real cool thing.
Yeah, it's I've been fortunate enough to come up here for the last 2 or 3 years now, I think it is, and you know, I guess represent the NHL Network and interview people on the way in and kind of get a feel for it. And it's it's a wonderful experience to think about being inducted into the Hall of Fame. It's something that no one, I don't think ever, even as a kid, you know, you may imagine becoming an athlete, you may imagine being part of a winning team and having success, but I don't think anybody grows up thinking they're going to the Hall of Fame. So it's quite an honor, and the NHL people do a nice job with it. As I've said you many times on the show, Don, and in our conversation in the past, I don't love the lack of transparency in the voting process, but that said, that is what it is. And, you know, the actual induction weekend is they do a wonderful job with it. And I'm really excited for all the people that are going in. It's quite an honor.
Yeah, it certainly is. And congratulations to the five individuals and the two players that most jumped to mind. Of course, Sergei Zubov, who was just an incredible offensive defenseman, won a cup with the Rangers in 94 and played a long, long time. And Guy Carbonneau, who is probably like the quintessential defensive forward.
Yeah. I mean, in the case of Zubov, I'm really happy that he is being honored. I think it's overdue. I think he was someone that didn't really look for the attention and therefore didn't really get maybe the attention he deserved. But to be part of two Stanley Cup winning teams, different franchises, the Rangers in 94 and the Dallas Stars in 99, he was the Rangers' leading scorer. That's one of the great trivia questions, right? Who led the Rangers in scoring the year they won the Cup in 94? During the regular season, and it was Sergei Zubov who actually started that season, I believe, in Binghamton in the minors, and quickly came up to the NHL and was such a terrific player for the Rangers, later for a year for Pittsburgh, and then he went to Dallas where he played the rest of his career, and he was really a big piece of the puzzle for the Dallas Stars as well. So I'm really excited for him, and, you know, Carbo is he is someone that, as you said, he was the quintessential defensive forward. I mean, they invented the Selke Trophy for Bob Gainey, and then once Bob retired, it was Guy Carbonneau was someone that was always thought of as in that same vein as someone who's just a really terrific two-way defensive forward. And so after many, many years, the Hall decides to bring him in, and listen, he was a great, great competitor and part of a lot of winning, so I'm happy for him.
And also congratulations to Haley Wickenheiser, Jim Rutherford, and Jerry York also being inducted into the Hall of Fame tonight. Let's dive in. Let's start here in the tri-state area with a couple of transactions that maybe raised a couple of eyebrows with the Rangers and with the Devils. Let's start with the Rangers and Elias Anderson being sent down. I'm not surprised by it. We had a chance to talk to Coach David Quinn before the game against Florida. He actually had a conversation with Elias during the morning skate, a very rare morning skate in Florida for the Rangers because the hotel's usually so far from the arena and they don't skate. It's nice. But after you lose 9-3 to Tampa the way they did, things had to get moved around. They had the flu go through the team, so they couldn't practice the day after, so they had the morning skate. And it's just a case of you've got Zibanejad coming back. You can't move him up. I guess you could move him to wing, but quite frankly, I don't see where he deserves it. I think he's on a fourth line. You could say, well, he's not playing with great guys that could produce. He's playing with Smith and sometimes Haley, sometimes McKeag. But listen, Hedl came up and immediately impressed, and this has not been the case for Anderson last year nor this year. He can continue to play his 8-9 minutes on the fourth line or go down to Hartford where he can maybe kind of excel. So I know a lot of people are disappointed, but I think I don't really know what else the Rangers could have done.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for Leah Sanderson is Izzy was a seventh overall pick. I think we talked about this last week.
Sure.
When we talked about him, and I think that it's probably for the best. Hopefully, he's going to have the right attitude and go to Hartford and just work on his game and hopefully get more opportunity and play in all different situations and just work to get better. He's still a very young player in this league, and sometimes it just takes a little longer. But in the world we live in now, with guys who are chosen that high in the draft, I mean, there's such high expectations for them. So, for me, I think it's probably a smart move. I think he needs to play more in the games. I think he needs to play in more offensive situations. It's not happening for him at the National Hockey League level, so I think it's smart for the Rangers to send him to Hartford. And like I said, hopefully he takes the right approach and has the right attitude and goes there and goes to work and just works on getting better. And, we'll see over time if he's going to be able to reach the potential that made him a seventh overall pick.
Yeah, you just got to be able to get the time. We talked about that a little bit, too. Just because you're on the fourth line and not getting a lot of minutes, it's sometimes difficult to get going. But you just can't graduate somebody up to the top line if they're not deserving of it either. And he needs ice time. And being a healthy scratch is only going to help for so long. Different scenario with the Devils. We're talking about a veteran in Corey Schneider placed on waivers for the purpose of eventually getting him down into the minor leagues. You're going to be paying a guy $6 million a year to play in Albany. But what else can you do? He's just not performing. Devils are trying to see if they can't salvage their season. And they've got Louis Domingue, who they acquired for a seventh-round pick from Tampa. He's been called up. I mean, what was your initial reaction to this move?
Well, it was a little surprising just because I didn't know if the Devils were ready to pull that trigger yet. But, right now it's that Mackenzie Blackwood has been their guy, and I think their schedule starts to heat up here, and there's not going to be, based on what John Hines said, there's not going to be a lot of opportunities for Corey to play. So what they need to do is, they knew they could send him through waivers. Nobody was going to pick him up with that contract, just kind of like Andrew Ladd with the Islanders last week. I mean, those contracts are prohibitive. Nobody's picking those players up. They can go probably back and forth to the minors, as they wish, because, again, nobody's picking those deals up. But I think for Corey, I guess time will tell if he's going to be able to make his way back to the National Hockey League. He's had a couple of injuries over the last couple of years. He's really struggled to kind of really find his way. He'll go down to the minor leagues now, and maybe the plan is for him to continue to work and to work his way back, or maybe the plan is that they're not sure he can play anymore, and maybe they're going to have to buy him out at some point. I don't know, but it's going to he's been around a long time. He had some great years. He's had some injury issues that have really derailed his career. And so, it goes back to the attitude. He's in a much different situation. He's an older player that's kind of been to the mountaintop in terms of playing at the National Hockey League level for a long time. So we will see what happens in the minors. But, he's a competitive guy, and he's a really good person being around him. And, hopefully he'll go down there, and if he gets to play some and can find his rhythm, maybe he can get find his way back to the NHL. I mean, let's face it, Louis Domingue coming in as the second guy is not the long-term solution either. So I think if Schneider plays well in the minors, there might be a willingness to bring him back. But it's tough for goalies down there because it's the schedule is tough. You'll play three games in 3 days. The team, sometimes the guys in front of you are tired. The level of players that you're dealing with is not the same as the NHL level. So it's going to be, a challenge for Corey, and we'll just have to watch and see how it plays out.
All right, let's take the temperature, EJ, okay? I know you like to do that.
All right, let's take it.
Struggling teams, Toronto, how concerned are you with their four-game losing streak?
Well, I'm up here, and there's a lot of concern. I mean, I got off the plane, and I'm looking at the papers, and there's a column in one of the papers, it's time to fire Mike Babcock.
Yeah.
That's where we're at in Toronto. There's very, very high expectations, and when you have high expectations and you don't meet them, usually there's a lot of pressure on the coach. I don't think Mike has forgotten how to coach. This is a team that has turned over their roster quite a bit. When you think about it, outside of their core stars from last year to this year, they have some guys that are they brought in that are really only going to be here for 1 year, really, like a Tyson Barrie, for example. And he hasn't really fit in so well here in Toronto so far. I mean, he doesn't get the power play minutes with Morgan Rielly being here, and that's like one of the areas that he can really produce points is on the power play. So he's not playing on the power play now. He's not producing as many points, and maybe some of those defensive shortcomings become more evident with a team that doesn't really defend very well to begin with. So they've got a number of issues, and they've got some more injury issues. I mean, Mitch Marner is out of the lineup now. They really haven't had their team together through the first quarter of the season. So they're off on a road trip right now. They're in Vegas. They'll be in Colorado. And, you know, we'll just see if they can get this thing turned around. But I would tell you, there's a real, you know, the way it looks right now, there's a real chance they could miss the playoffs. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying there's a chance that could happen if they don't get going. And, you know, the pressure on Mike Babcock with each loss is going to continue to grow. And that 6-1 loss in Pittsburgh on Saturday night certainly escalated those who want to see Babcock removed.
All right. How about Calgary? Three straight losses, including yesterday, to a very average Vegas team. I know there were a lot of expectations around Vegas, but they weren't exactly a house on fire, and they dropped 6 on the Flames.
Yeah. Those two teams, look at them in the standings. I mean, they're identical in points. I think Calgary has played one more game. I haven't liked Calgary's game all year, Don, and if it wasn't for Matthew Tkachuk with some late-game heroics in some of the games earlier in the season,
yeah,
you know, instead of 23 points, they might be looking at, like, having 18 points or something like that. So I don't really love the makeup of their team. I didn't like what they did in the offseason. I mean, they went out and added players from the worst team in the league to their roster. I mean, they added players, you know, from Edmonton that Milan Lucic can't play anymore. He's now off Calgary Flame, and he's got a lengthy contract. And they added a Tobias Rieder, who had 0 goals last year. So, I mean, I don't know how those type of acquisitions really help you in the offseason. But, Matt Tkachuk kind of went off in the media after the loss in Vegas. I don't know where that team is at. I think that there's guys like Mark Giordano is a great player, and he won the Norris Trophy last year. But is he going to have a better year this year? I don't think so. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm not sold on the Flames.
And Nashville, I thought they might take a little bit of a step back this year. They're certainly not completely awful or anything like that. I saw them a couple of weeks ago. Rangers actually beat them in Nashville, but lost a couple in a row, very average overall. And they can't really blame injuries, can they? I mean, they've gotten Forsberg back. Are you surprised that they're in the state that they're in right now?
Yeah, I mean, I am a little bit because they certainly have the personnel to be better. I mean, a couple years ago, Donnie, I thought it was going to be their year. I really liked their team. And then it just didn't happen from the second half of the year. And I just think, you know, Peter Laviolette has had a lot of success in this league, and he's won a Stanley Cup. But Peter likes to play a pressure game, and I don't think his team defends all that well. And, you know, when you get into important games, when you don't defend that well, I think that's a problem. So, for me, I think Nashville will figure it out because they score a lot of goals. They have a lot of offensive weapons. But I think in the end, I think it's going to be more of a, you know, I don't see them as a team. Like, I don't have them marked as a team that I think can really contend for the Western Conference title or to win the Stanley Cup. I think they'll make I think they have a good chance to make the playoffs.
Yes.
But I don't see them as a team that, to me, is going to really be a real contender in the Western Conference.
And you just wonder, too, and we both like Peter a lot. I think he's a heck of a coach, but he clearly comes with an expiration date, right? I mean, he had success basically everywhere he's been, but it's all ended in a firing, right? It started with the Islanders, getting them into the playoffs 3 straight years, loses his job. You go to you win a cup in Carolina. You go to a final in Philadelphia. He's been to a final in Nashville. I mean, the resume speaks for itself, but in all those stops, it just seems like, you know, he hits the expiration date, right? And is he knocking on the door of that now?
Yeah, the good news for Peter is David Poile doesn't like firing coaches, right? I mean, he had Barry Trotz there forever. In Washington, he had coaches. He had Brian Murray there for a long stretch, and then they went through a couple of coaches near the end of his tenure there in Washington. But he's a pretty patient guy, and I think Peter is a good coach. And, you know, you're right. When you look at it, Peter, usually his best work is early in his tenure. Like, that was the case in Philadelphia. It was the case in Carolina. That was, you know, in Nashville, he's had some success, but they haven't been able to, you know, they got to a cup final. So, I mean, that was kind of like Philly. But, you know, like I said, I watched their teams over the last couple of years since then. And, they just leave me wanting a little bit more. And I don't think, again, they don't defend well enough for me. So we'll see. I mean, but I think they certainly are a team that should be in the playoffs. I mean, they have a lot of firepower up front.
Yeah, they do. There's no question about that. Now let's switch over to some teams that have gotten hot. How about San Jose? They dropped now 6 straight wins.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, it's a shocker for me. But, you know, the good news for San Jose is this. You got to look at their schedule. They've played a lot of home games from November 1st on during the stretch, and they will play. I think it's 21 or 22 out of 31 from November 1st to January 1st. So it's a stretch when they really could make up some ground. Their schedule has been kind to them. I mean, I think they beat the Red Wings the other night in the shootout. They've played Minnesota. They've played some teams, you know, that aren't really at the top of the league. But the bottom line is you have to win those games, and they have found a way to do it, and they've won six in a row, and they've kind of pushed themselves back into things. And, you know, got to give Peter DeBoer a lot of credit, because I was real, and I'm still not sold on San Jose. I still think that, you know, I got to see them beat some better teams, but Peter said at the beginning of the month, he goes, you know, if the end of November rolls around and we haven't figured it out by then, I think we're in trouble. But he goes, I think we will in November. And I think he had an eye on that schedule. And so yeah, far they've taken advantage of it. But, you know, we'll see. We got a long way to go. You know, when you have to catch up and dig yourself out of a hole, that's an awful lot of hard work you have to do early in the season. So we'll see how that plays out in the rest of the season. The one thing about the Sharks is crazy is, their goaltenders aren't very good, but yet their penalty killing is really good, and the save percentage on the penalty kill is very good. So it's one of those kind of stats that doesn't make any sense. But, you know, that's going to be it for San Jose. I mean, Jones and Dell have got to play. They've got to play better, and right now they're playing well enough to win. We'll see if they can continue.
Another home game against Edmonton coming up tomorrow, then at Vegas, home against the Islanders. That should be a great game. The Islanders just continue to find ways to win. I mean, how about what they pulled on Saturday, right? The reversal of what ended their winning streak, put up three, you know, in the third period to save a game.
Yeah, and, you know, you just have to give them a lot of credit. They're invested. I mean, that's the word that I came up with last week. We interviewed Barry Trotz on our show last week, and always a pleasure talking to Barry. And, like, that group is invested. And they also, they have some players on that team that people don't realize are better than they think. I mean, Pulak and Pelech on defense are really good young defensemen that are getting better with each and every game. They're the only two guys on the Islanders as of last week that played more than 20 minutes a night. You know, the Taze kid is a really good defenseman, went to Quinnipiac, a really good skater. And so some of these guys, people don't know them yet, but they play a system, they're committed to it, they're invested in what they're trying to do as a team, and, you know, they have some players there that probably are a little bit underrated at this point in their career. So we'll see if they can keep it going right now, but they've been fun to watch.
Are you ready for some tweets?
Let's go.
All right. Tim asks the $64,000 question, as far as I'm concerned here. Washington will play its 23rd game tonight, sitting atop the Metro. Rangers have played only 18 games and won't play until Wednesday. I've heard of 2-3 games in hand, but 4-5 seems excessive. No, forces Rangers to play catch-up all season long. P.S., Tampa has only played 17 games. But I will say, Tim, Tampa played 17 because they went to Sweden and got a long week, basically a week off after they came back. But, you know, listen, nobody's been able to answer the question on why the Rangers had that rogue week off after 2 games played. I don't know if it affects you. Like, you say they're playing catch-up. The Rangers will eventually make up those games, but how does a coach, you're a coach now, how do you look at that? You look at the standings, you're sitting in sixth place, but you also realize you haven't played as many games. So do you get caught up in that at all, or are you just aggravated that you haven't been able to get in any kind of rhythm because you get so many days off?
Well, I think it is frustrating. I think that players are creatures of habit, and they like to have a little bit of a rhythm to what they're doing, and they like to be playing, you know, every other day, every second day, and get in that rhythm. And I know early in the season, the Rangers had such a goofy schedule the way that was playing out. So, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, Steve Hasipetris does the schedule. The teams all have some kind of, you know, they have some say in it. Sometimes it's just the dates that are available. And, you know, and I know one thing also, Donnie, is that teams haven't played a lot now. Their schedule will get very taxing as they make up some of these
rounds
along the way and games played. So that's the other side of the coin, is that if you get injuries and you're more likely to get them when you're playing, you know, a heavy workload. I mean, that's that concern as well. So, the Ranger schedule this year has been odd for a number of reasons.
Nick, what goal scorer do you think the Islanders should trade for to put them over the top?
You have to remember now, if you're going to go out and get a goal scorer, he's got to fit into what the Islanders do, right? Because you're not going to just have a guy on an on an island, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, hanging, looking to, you know, to cherry pick for goals. It's got to be somebody that can fit in their system and play the 200-foot game that they require their players to play. So, I mean, Lou has been at it a long time. He'll look around and see, you know, what's available. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be really a player for Taylor Hall, for example, who I do think will get traded at some point. But, you know, I don't think that's the spot that he's going to end up in. Although I think I'd have to look. I think the Islanders do have cap room to accommodate something like that. But, you know, again, it has to be someone that could come in and fit with what they're doing. I don't think they have such a unique chemistry there right now. I don't know if, you know, obviously they don't score a ton, but it's really the way they play. They don't give up a lot either. So they score enough to win. They've got a number of guys that can score when need be. I mean, a Barzal and a, you know, Lee and Bailey and, you know, several others, Eberle. I mean, this is not a team devoid of skill. It's just a team that is committed to playing a game that makes it a little bit more difficult to score.
Well, I don't want to get inside the head of Nick, but he's probably thinking about what happened last year against Carolina and Lou Lamoriello teams. If you go back to those Devil years when they played that locking style where they played the trap and all that, is that, hey, there are times where you're thirsty for goals, right? And they just don't happen to come. I think that's more than, I think in the regular season, it's not an issue. Now, Lou has, you know, he went out and traded for Alexander McGillney, Doug McLean, Doug Gilmore, Dave Anderchuk. I mean, he has done it before. He didn't do anything last year, but that doesn't mean he won't do something this year. If he believes that he needs to make a move to get this team over the top, he'll do it. But he won't do it for the sake of the fans. He won't do it for the sake of ticket sales. He'll do it if he believes that it is the missing piece. And we'll see if that's available.
Yeah, and we'll see what the, you know, what the market looks like as we get into February too, because obviously the, you know, this league is pretty close right now, so maybe there'll be more definition in terms of buyers and sellers. There certainly will be by we get into February.
Well, speaking of players possibly being moved, David says, with the rumors swirling around Taylor Hall, one destination that has been popping up is him going back to Edmonton. How realistic is it that he could happen?
Not realistic at all.
Okay.
Zero realism.
Zero realism. All right.
Zero realism. Here's the problem, and it's like twofold with Edmonton. First of all, they have no cap room. So that's the first thing. So unless they're going to trade Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's under contract for a couple more years and a good player, to the Devils for a player whose contract expires at the end of the year, who they've already had, and really isn't a fit with Connor McDavid, the way that McDavid plays, the need for the Edmonton Oilers is on defense now, really, and maybe down the road in goal. So I don't know where that's come from, but I just don't see that as a match at all. I think the teams that come to mind for me right away when it comes to Taylor Hall or maybe the Montreal Canadiens, they have the cap room. They tried to get Sebastian Aho, remember, with the offer sheet.
And, sure.
You know, although they're, even though Canadiens fans will yell at me when I say this because they'll say, oh, we're loaded at center and they'll go through all the centers, they still don't have that really high-end number one center to set everybody back. I know, you know, Danault is a good player and, you know, some of the other guys, they've had Domi play the middle a little bit. He's been good. I mean, they have some good centers there. They just don't have that legit number one center. And I think that's why they went out and tried to get Aho. And so Taylor Hall isn't a fit in that regard, but he is another good, big, strong, fast winger that could fit in Montreal, a team that just had a couple of injuries come their way now with Jonathan Drouin and Paul Byron both being out for weeks with different issues. So that's a team that comes to mind. I think Vancouver is a team that comes to mind as well. I think there's some cap space there. They could use another top six type forward to fill out that group. They've got some good centers, you know, there when you think of Pettersson and you think of Horvat. So, you know, that could be a place. But, you know, time will tell as we get down through the season. But, you know, I think that the Devils will have to move Hall at some point unless he decides that he wants to sign, which I don't see that happening right now. But I don't think, you know, just to go back to the original thing, I just don't see any fit with Edmonton.
All right, Chris says, hey, guys, in a surprise move, the Flyers called up Morgan Frost, and it appears he'll center Giroux and Konecny at the top line. Do you think they're rushing Frost in order to try to shake up the team or get more offense? And get more offense.
No, I mean, listen, Morgan Frost is a really talented young player. He was a high draft choice. I think he was either a first-round pick or a early second-round pick. I'm just forgetting exactly what number he went at. He was acquired, I believe, with a pick they got from St. Louis in the Braden Schenn deal a couple of years ago. And, you know, he's a really good player that they think is going to be part of their group. He didn't make the team out of camp. And now, you know, they've been watching what he's been doing, you know, at the other levels, and feel that, you know, in the first month or so, he's been playing well and has earned a call up. And, you know, they're looking to add to their group. I mean, Philadelphia has actually been playing well. You know, they have moved into a playoff spot above the line right now. So, you know, Morgan Frost is a guy that figures to be a flyer. You know, he figures to be someone in their long-term plan. So we'll see and watch how it plays out for him.
Daniel says, hey, guys, the Hawks are on a pretty hot stretch at the moment. The offense is heating up, driven by Kane. The defense is still giving up a bunch of shots per game, though. Is this sustainable, or do you think that they will improve on that?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's sustainable, but, you know, they have played really well. You know, it's funny how this league has gone this year, Donnie. They went into Nashville about a month ago and just got their doors blown off. I mean, it was the day, I believe, that Roman Yoshi signed, and Nashville, like, outshot them something like 50-18, and it was just a blowout. And then they go in the same two teams about 3 weeks later, and Chicago beats them 7-2.
Right.
So, you know, you go figure. But Chicago is definitely playing much better right now. They've tried to make some adjustments to their system. The good news for them is between Crawford and Leonard, they have two really good goalies. I think they could just run those guys out every other night, just rotate them through. And Crawford literally stole points for them against Vegas last Wednesday night. I mean, it was he looked like the Corey Crawford we remember from the Stanley Cup here. So, they're playing well right now. They're playing with some confidence. And, you know, when you have a team that has some really high-end people like Kane and Taze and Keith, you really never want to write them off. But I don't like the way they defend, and I think their shooting percentage is probably a little bit above where it'll end up. So I don't know if it's sustainable, but, hey, you got to give them credit because they've played very well of late.
All right, I think you'll appreciate this from Troy. He sent the graphic that was on Fox Sports LA over the weekend when Jeff Carter played in his 1,000th game. Mm-hmm. And you go over the drafts. 1999, four players from the 99 draft played in 1,000 games. In 2007, in 2001, four. In 2002, five. Do you know what the number is for 2003?
15.
12. Still.
Yeah, I was close.
I mean,
how is that
not maybe, not just in the NHL? I mean, when you look at greatest drafts in sports, period. I mean, 2003 has to be up there, and there's evidence of it. Then you go to the very next year, 2004, there's one. All right. Now, obviously it's going to go down. That number will rise possibly, but you know, you're still talking about, you know, in 2002, there were five, in 2004, one, 12 in 2003. And if you ever have time out there, if you're listening, and obviously you may be listening on your app or on the computer, just fire up the 2003 draft and just don't look at the first round. You know, see how many players you got to go before you get to a Pavelski. From that draft, you know, so we've talked about it.
There might be a few more as time goes on, you know.
Just an incredible draft, really was.
Oh yeah, and that's one of those ones that when you missed, as the Rangers did that year in the first round.
Yeah, Hugh Jessamyn.
Because think about it, the players in that draft, like Patrice Bergeron was in that draft, right? Now he was a second round pick. And it's not to say that, the Rangers should have picked him. I mean, hindsight is always 20/20. But the reality is when you miss in a draft that's chock full of great players like that, Patrice Bergeron is still helping the Boston Bruins. They went to the final last year, Game 7.
Right.
You know, I think there's a Ryan Getzlaff within that draft. Like, that's someone that if the Rangers had picked Getzlaff, right, and they get to a final in 2014, maybe he's the difference between them not winning and winning in that final. Maybe he's the difference between being in the Eastern Conference final and then advancing in different years. So it's just really unfortunate when teams, and I don't mean to pick on the Rangers, just that's the one that comes to mind. There were other teams that did not do well in that draft either. And it haunts you. And it haunts you for a long time.
Yeah, just take a look at the first round, just blow you away. Marc-Andre Fleury, first overall pick. Eric Staal, second. Nathan Horton, third. Nikolai Zverev, fourth. Tomas Vanek, fifth. Mahal Mihalik, sixth.
Point. Like Nikolai Zverev, think about the Columbus Blue Jackets and their fate. If
right.
If they had gone in a different direction than Nikolai Zverev.
But, yeah, like, Ryan Suter's.
At the time, Nikolai Zverev was a very highly thought of prospect, I believe me. You know, like with the Rangers going with Jessamyn, that was unusual because he was not as highly thought of. I mean, he was a very big guy. But certainly, if they would have went another direction when they were picking, I think they were picking 11 or 12, somewhere in there, they could have gone another direction. But, you know, Columbus takes Zverev. People bought the world of Zverev, and he really never was a player.
I mean, just guys that are still in the league, right? Ryan Suter, Braden Colburn, they went 7 and 8. Dion Phaneuf, 9. Jeff Carter, 11. Dustin Brown, 13. Brent Seabrook, 14. Yeah. Zach Parise, 17.
Zach Parise.
You know, yeah. Ryan Getzlaff, 19. Brett Burns, 20. Let's see here. Even a Brian Boyle, 26th
Brian
overall,
Boyle.
Still in the league, still playing well. Corey Perry, 28th overall. Louis Erickson, 33rd. Patrice Bergeron, 45th. Shea Weber, 49th. Corey Crawford, 52. David Backes, 62. Jimmy Howard, 64. He's still in the league and performing.
Yep. Amazing. And then you get to those picks like a Pavelski and some of those guys that went later.
Pavelski, 205th overall pick.
Wow.
Tobias Enstrom, 239. Dustin Byfuglien, 245.
Yeah.
How about this? Yaroslav Halak.
And that wasn't his weight.
Yaroslav Halak, 271.
Yeah.
Brian Elliott, 291.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second to last
Amazing.
Player taken in the draft. Was Brian Elliott
still playing?
Yeah,
still playing.
I mean that's just incredible stuff. All right, before we let you go, we actually had to edit out. I thought it was some nice work we did last week on Don Cherry, but it wasn't evergreen. It kind of rotted on the stem there because I think five minutes after we were done with it, he ended up getting fired. Just your initial thoughts on that?
Well, I would just say this: I've had some time to think about it now. I think Don has said things that he could have been fired for that I believe were much more pointed and nasty than the comments that he ends up getting fired for. Not that those weren't. It's just that, you know, the world has kind of changed over time. And I think that Don had an opportunity to do something good. He had an opportunity to apologize. And he had an opportunity to turn this around a little bit, because he even went on subsequent interviews and said, you know, I wish I would have said everyone or everybody. So there is a little bit of a sense on his part, based on that statement, that maybe I could have done something different. But Don is in his mid-80s. He's been doing things a long time. He's a stubborn guy. He believes the things he believes. I don't believe, my thought process about life and people is way different than his. And, I think that he had a huge platform. And if you're going to use that platform to make those kind of statements, you have to be held accountable for him at some point. So, but I'm kind of saddened that Don didn't take the opportunity to apologize and to try to, you know, to try to bring people together instead of separate people. And now what we've had is there's camps that really are staunch Don Cherry supporters, and we have people, you know, who believe differently. Like, I would say I'm in that camp. I
believe
differently. But, it would be nice to try to bring people together, especially the way the world is right now.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate for me. But, you know, in the end, I mean, you go back. I watched the Russian Five, Don. And some of the things that he said about the Russian players, you shake your head. Like, how was this guy allowed to continue on this big platform?
No, you're right. And if you remember, like, there was talk before the season started that he was not going to be back and that it was kind of an 11th hour thing that they decided to bring him back. I was talking to somebody over the weekend that said when Rogers bought up all the hockey rights, I guess, what was that, 5-6 years ago, that there was serious discussion about not bringing Don back then. So that's all kind of part of it. You know, it probably was the last straw, but it would have been nice, even if you side with Don, and like I'm with you, I'm kind of on the fence about it too, because I do think he's a good person in there that just never evolved with the times at all, and some of his thoughts and opinions, that he just, instead of being stubborn, instead of giving the laundry list on Fox News that he did this week of all the other great things he's done, that just to say you're sorry. All right, and just I apologize. Yeah. I didn't mean it to come out the way that it did. I apologize.
He even said, I wish I would have said
right
everybody instead of you people, which is what he said.
And the silliness of if I apologize, then nobody is ever going to believe. You have to speak with conviction, and if Coach's Corner is going to be believable, stop it. You're not. It's not brain surgery. Okay, it's just a guy that entertains people for 7 to 8 minutes between the first and second period on hockey night in Canada. Okay, you're not the president of the United States. You're not the prime minister. You're just a guy talking hockey. Okay, people are going to believe you or not believe you. They ultimately want to be entertained. And the people that like you are going to like you. The people that hate you are going to hate you. You apologizing is not going to completely destroy your character and what your words mean.
No.
Apologizing is just acknowledging the fact that you've evolved as a human being and you're sorry for something. I've apologized a million times to my wife. Does that mean my word doesn't have any value anymore in my relationship with my wife? No. It makes us stronger as people. That's how you evolve as a human being.
Yes. Well said, Don.
Come on, how many times have you apologized to Meredith? Really, just even today. I'm sure you're in double digits today.
I apologize just to people, random people on the street.
sometimes I wake up.
They don't even know who I am.
Sometimes
I'm so sorry.
Hey, I know. Sometimes so it's preemptive. Sometimes I'll just be like, listen, I'm sorry for what? I don't know. Something I'm probably going to do later, and I won't have the chance. Before I left for Florida over the weekend. Listen, I'm probably going to do something silly, so I'm going to apologize now for something that I left out.
Get it out of the way.
Yes. So, but we make light of it. But honestly, I do think sometimes the apologies are heard on deaf ears, because that shouldn't be a get out of jail free card. I understand that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, just acknowledge.
But I do think. He did say it. That's why I know. Think it's crazy. He did say, I wish I would have said something else. But hey,
Do you think it came down to Don? I want you to go on Sunday with Ron and apologize for what you said, and he refused. Do you think it came down to that?
I think that's probably what happened. I mean, it seemed like they wanted him. I mean, they've had Ron, who was tacitly gave his approval with the thumbs up. I mean, went on and was very thoughtful, and he still, he's wrestling with the whole thing, because Don and he are very, very close. I mean, I know, covering this league for as long as I have and covering major events, when they're on the road, I mean, they are inseparable, those two.
Yeah.
So they are very, very close friends. And, to have this separation of, in philosophy or in thinking, is it's got to be tough for both of them. So at the end of the day, for me, I think I said it last week, Don Cherry has been on for a long, long time. He's done very, very well. So there's not a lot of sympathy that I guess I would have. But in my dealings with him, he was always very nice to me. I'm sure I know he's done a lot of nice things and good things. But as you get older, and I'm sure you feel the same way, as we get older in life, there's a lot of shades of gray in with all people and all things. And, not everybody is, there's nobody that's perfect. I'm certainly not. And, this is where we're at. So I wish Don good fortune in the future. But I certainly, I don't feel like, he was wronged here in any way. I don't feel that at all.
No, listen, there's no question. And I wish him the best of the luck and whatever else that he does. And I'm going to wish you a good time in Toronto. Have a safe flight back.
You. But, hey, one thing. I saw one of the tweets. You're not going to ask me about this dealing Georgiev to the Devils, so then Shestorkin come in for the Rangers. I mean, one guy tweeted that. I started laughing. I'm like, why would the Rangers just give the Devils, just to make room for, the plan is working really well now. Lundqvist and Georgiev at the NHL level, Shestorkin playing in the minors and playing well in Hartford and getting his feet wet in North America. Like, the plan is good. Why would you trade anybody and then help the Devils?
No, I don't think that would happen. They've only made one deal, I think, in history, and that was a couple of years ago with the Michael Grabner, and that certainly didn't work out for the Devils at all.
Let's put it this way, if the Rangers felt they could get something really substantial from the Devils, then maybe they would consider it. But
I don't think that was going to happen.
I was laughing because I thought it's one of those deals that works out really good for one side, and
as most of the people that want deals done always forget about there being another side of it. But I will say this before you go, I think it's working this year and it's fine. It'll be interesting what develops next year.
Yeah,
because now Hanke will be in the last year of his deal. All right, Shestorkin is going to eventually have to come up here. You can't play with three goaltenders. Does Hank retire? Yeah. Is Hank going to be willing to move in the last year of his contract? That's definitely going to be a problem next year, but certainly not a problem this year.
Yeah, and I think that's a situation that'll be fluid right throughout this season, and we'll see what opportunities become available. And Jeff Gorton and the Rangers management will have to make the decision down the road. But we look at it one way today. We might look at it another way 6 weeks from now. We might look at it another way in February. So, again, I think that's one that'll play out over time.
Yes, time does seem to settle all of that for everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, buddy. We'll try this again next week, all right?
You got it, buddy.
All right. Yeah. He's the best. There's nobody even close. And that, of course, is E.J. Raddick. Not even close. Absolutely. I didn't even know you were listening when I said that.
Let me apologize for that. Last See ya.
All right, buddy. All right. That's E.J. Raddick. NHL Now between the hours of 4 and 6 on the NHL Network. Just a couple of games tonight. Capitals home for the Ducks. That's 7 o'clock Eastern time start. Kings and the Coyotes. That's a 9 o'clock Eastern time start. So we're going to keep it to Wednesday. We'll be back then. In case something happens, we'll, of course, change gears. But we'll be back with you on Wednesday when Leah Hextall will join us for her Wednesday spot to kind of recap a much more extensive Tuesday schedule in the NHL. Best way to get in touch with me, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Always fun to talk to EJ. Back with you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.